From our studios in downtown Washington, D.C., this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. A lot of reporters have been calling lately about the stimulus package and what it means to the criminal justice system. The criminal justice system will be receiving approximately $4 billion to the system to improve the system, to improve law enforcement, to improve the entire criminal justice system, to improve the research package. So what I thought I'd do today is to bring on some people who really deal with the criminal justice system authorities. One from the National Criminal Justice Association, and we have Cabell Cropper, the Executive Director of the National Criminal Justice Association. We also have, back at our microphones, we have Pat Dishman, the Director of the Tennessee Office of Criminal Justice Programs, and we also have Christian Mahoney, the Executive Director for the Maryland Governor's Office of Crime Control and Prevention, to come to grips with the $4 billion, approximately $4 billion that we're getting, the criminal justice system is getting, and what does it mean in terms of crime control? What does it mean in terms of improved public safety? So Executive Director Cropper, being I cannot pronounce your first name correctly, I'm just going to go ahead and use that. What does it mean? Sum up the whole thing for us, Cabell.
Well, I think the funding that is coming through the America Recovery and Reinvestment Act for the criminal justice system is intended to support the overall purpose of that bill, and that's to either retain jobs or expand jobs. So it will allow all components of the criminal justice system to retain programs that could have been lost because of the lack of funding at the state and local level, as well as create and expand already existing programs. And that's really what Kristen and Pat are here to talk about.
Because they control that money at the state level, and an awful lot of that money is coming to the state level in terms of discretionary spending, correct?
Right. A large portion, not all of the $4 billion goes to the states, but a large portion of it does.
Cabell, can you summarize what we're getting? We're getting money to hire new police officers. We're getting money to improve the criminal justice system at the state level. We're getting money for research. Now, again, ladies and gentlemen, it goes way beyond our discussion today. I urge everybody who's interested, because there's a nice list on the website of the National Criminal Justice Association at www.ncja.org, and I'll be repeating that throughout the program, www.ncja.org, because there's money going for victims issues. There's money going for women victimization issues. There is money there for tribal issues. But we're going to be talking broadly about all the money that's coming down the pike today, correct?
Correct. And I think the two major programs within the $4 billion are the COPS hiring program, which is being funded at $1 billion, and the Byrne JAG program administered at the state level that's being funded at $2 billion, portion of which is administered by the state criminal justice agencies, and a portion that goes directly to localities. Pat and Kristen head up offices that administer the portion that goes to state agencies for to work within the criminal justice system within their states.
Now, any one of you can come in and basically answer this question. So we've had a deficit in terms of spending out of Washington that's going to the criminal justice agencies at the state level, correct? There's been a problem. It's been reduced and reduced dramatically in the last couple of years, correct?
Yes, it was the Byrne JAG program was cut by 67% in fiscal year 2008. So state agencies were really struggling to maintain the programs that they already had underway, as well as to implement new programs.
Okay. And the heart and soul, what I have found in the 40 years that I've been in the criminal justice system, is that money drives everything. Now, feel free to disagree with me, any one of you, Pat or Kristen. Money drives the criminal justice system. It's not so much, I mean, we all went to school. We all studied sociology or law or criminology, and we're all taught, and we all read the research, and we all have a pretty good understanding as to what works, what doesn't work. But if you don't have the money, it doesn't matter what works. And I get newspaper clippings every day here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. And what I hear is the steady, steady drumbeat of states laying off people, closing prisons, eliminating parole and probation agents. The states are in a dire fiscal situation all throughout this country. So it seems to me two things. A, money drives everything regardless as to what works. And B, the states are already suffering tremendously.
Go ahead, Pat. Well, you're exactly right, Lynn. You know, we have been struggling at the national level with the burn program, as Cabell talked about, and literally that has been going on for 7 or 8 years, up and down with that funding. So it's very hard to maintain programs or start new programs if you're in a retrenchment mode or you don't exactly know where you're going to be. In the last year and a half, the deficits facing the states have really become a problem. And much of that is driven, of course, by the economy, and states are different in the way they raise revenue. But I know in our state, Tennessee, because we rely on sales tax revenue for much of the revenue we use to fund our programs and services, because of the sharp decline there, we are looking at a horrible deficit situation.
And Maryland's basically the same, Kristen.
For Maryland, I mean, BIRN JAG has driven innovation and collaboration. And in places like Baltimore City, where that's a big old city that has a police department annual technology budget of only $80,000,
mm-hmm.
You know, they rely on this type of discretionary funding to help them keep up with technology. You know, over the last 8 years, technology's moved forward. CSI's, you know, gotten juries to expect better and better technology, but the discretionary funds for local law enforcement have just not kept up.
Well, it's funny that you mention that, because I can't stand to watch those shows, because the reality and what people see on TV are so far apart, it's silly.
Right. And, I mean, generally the locals are good at hiring and retaining, but you know, during a depression or recession like right now, we're not even so good at hiring and retaining public safety folks. And you can forget overtime. You know, the officers were not having additional presence on the street, and we're actually not filling the vacancies that we have. So all of this kind of comes together for us at the best possible time.
So, again, to summarize, we have money, and I think it's, Cabell, what, $2 billion going to the COPS program, which is to hire new police officers?
$1 billion. $1 billion to the COPS program.
$1 billion.
$2 billion to the Burn JAG.
$2 billion. Okay. And that's basically going to put literally thousands upon thousands of police officers on the streets in the various cities throughout the country. From what I understand, in the past, there was, under the old COPS program, there was a match, a 25% match. In this case, there is no match, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So that is a huge plus. What we're talking about are literally tens of thousands of police officers going into the cities throughout the country, going into the metropolitan areas, I should say, throughout the country. So I think people are going to appreciate that. The other $2 billion, we say the BIRN program, and in essence, that's money that's going to go to the states. The states will, in essence, decide what their priorities are. And if those priorities are prosecutorial, if those priorities are corrections, if they're parole and probation, the states are probably in the best position to decide for themselves what it is that they want to do. And the third would be basically research. But the research money is coming out. When I say research, help me, and feel free to disagree with me, anybody, that the bulk of the innovation that comes from the criminal justice system comes from the state level in terms of localities trying new and unique and innovative things with partial funding or full funding from the federal government. Am I right or wrong?
Well, I certainly think that's a piece of it. And I also to echo what you were talking about as far as these different pots of money, the states are really in a position to look at everything, whether that's coming directly from the federal government through the COPS program or the BIRN funds that will come through the states and then be passed down to state agencies and locals. One of the things that I think will be the most difficult for us is to balance all of this, Lynn. We want to make sure that we spread the money out as far as it will go, because in this tight budget situation that we've been in for the last year and a half, every part of the system is hurting.
And people need to understand that. I'm not quite sure that everybody fully understands the fact that the criminal justice system in this country is hurting, and hurting badly, from not just a couple years. I mean, people see this as a recession within the last year and a half. Most of the states that I've encountered through newspaper reports, through either Stateline or other sources, this has been going on not just for 1 or 2 years in terms of this recessionary period, but 4, 5, 6 years and longer that states have been struggling to meet their own budgets. So when that happens, that means the criminal justice system does not expand or actually shrinks, and that means innovation doesn't take place, correct?
Right. I mean, that the burn JAG money and the federal support can test specific, you know, drug gun task forces, and those task forces, when those officers come to those task forces, they generally can't bring their equipment from home. That equipment, you know, needs to stay with their home police department.
Sure.
And so they've got it. Something's got to motivate that collaboration and the location and the equipment that's needed to go out and serve, 10,000 violent offender warrants, for example. You know, that just doesn't happen by people coming together and saying we ought to do it. I mean, you've got it. There's some real equipment needed.
Exactly. And I think back about the program we did on drug courts, Lynn. That's mm-hmm. a very good example. We used the burn JAG money and also some other drug court money that was made available by the Department of Justice to pilot that type of improvement inside Tennessee, and it, as we did in lots of states. And it was so successful here that it convinced our legislature to appropriate $3.5 million recurring dollars for drug courts across the state, and we now have 45. So in my mind, that worked exactly the way that the burn JAG can work when you're trying to look at new innovative programs and see whether or not you want to expand them.
Well, that's my point in all of this, is that I think the bottom line for anybody looking into the stimulus package and anybody looking into the approximately $4 billion that the states are going to get through the federal government is that it is an opportunity to once again develop drug courts. And there's uniform research that says that drug courts all over the country are reducing crime. They're reducing recidivism. They're making our society safer. So either through innovative police strategies, innovative court strategies, either parole and probation joining with law enforcement or reentry programs to be sure that there's sufficient resources to provide for reentry programs. And we can tell through a variety of research that those lower recidivism, approximately 20%. Now, 20% doesn't sound huge, but that, in terms of the fiscal realities for a state, can forestall the building of a prison or two. And more, that means more money going into the elderly, more money going into education, more money going into colleges, if you're going to look at it from a fiscal reality point of view, that this money is the seed money that creates all of that. And I think that, and feel free to agree or disagree, I think that's the heart and soul, that this money, the $4 billion stimulus dollars, allows the states to once again become innovators in terms of what's good for that particular state.
I think you're exactly right, and I would add another piece to that. Our governor's office is very interested in looking at all the different pots of stimulus money and the different areas that are going to be covered, for example, education, and how collaborations can happen between those pots.
Okay.
There's a lot of money there for improvements in education. And, you know, we do innovative things with education. Kristen, I think of our school resource officer program. I mean, I think everybody is convinced that that's sound, solid, and where we can have it, it helps.
Right. Go ahead, please.
Another great program that we've been able to do with the burn JAG money is to fund crime analysts, to assign them to police departments, because that's not something that you learn in the police academy. And rather than take a police officer off the street and stick him in front of a computer to map crimes, you know, there are GIS mapping majors coming out of major universities that are in positions to assist law enforcement agencies. And this funding can get us started with a lot of those programs with agencies that want to go in that direction.
We're halfway through our program, and we're doing this through the auspices of the National Criminal Justice Association, our fifth program in a series. You can find a full list of all of the stimulus money, the $4 billion broken down piece by piece at www.ncja.org, www.ncja.org, the website of the National Criminal Justice System, National Criminal Justice Association. Cabell Cropper, the executive director of the National Criminal Justice Association, is here with us today. Kristen Mahoney, the executive director of the Maryland Governor's Office of Crime Control and Prevention, and Pat Dishman, the director of the Tennessee Office of Criminal Justice Programs. Cabell, I'm going to ask this question to you because it's a bit dicey and a bit political. There are people out there who would simply say it's not the role of the federal government to fund local criminal justice agencies, that that the overwhelming majority of what we call the criminal justice system in this country is a state function, is a local function. And they're saying to themselves, why is the federal government giving, you know, supplementing what is in essence a local and state function? And why is my taxpayer dollar, say, going to Baltimore to do crime analyst or to provide crime analyst or provide innovative policing? And B, what does all this have to do with the stimulus package?
Well, I think that the way that we would answer that is what we've said for years about the Byrne JAG program, and what both Kristen and Pat have said, is that it supports innovation. It allows the states to experiment with programs to see what works and then to continue them. The Byrne JAG program is structured so that the funding is available for 3 years for a particular program, and by the third year, federal funding is no longer available, so the state either picks it up or makes the decision not to because it hasn't shown its effectiveness. So I think the role of the federal government in terms of state and local criminal justice is that of providing, you might call, venture capital to invest, to try new things, to try new solutions, see what works, to do the research, to provide training. In addition, a lot of states are facing criminal justice issues that cross jurisdictions. And so that also invokes the federal role. So I think that yes, generally crime is, as the saying goes, all crime is local, but there is a definite constructive role for the federal government and federal assistance with state and local criminal justice.
Okay. And
I couldn't agree.
But why?
I couldn't agree more with that, Lynn. There's no point all of the states reinventing the wheel. If something works someplace, then we certainly need to use what's already been found out about that and not have to sit down and put time and effort into finding out ourselves.
A prime example of this, Len, is the drug courts. Drug courts were funded by Byrne JAG back in Miami years ago and proved to be very effective, and now they're a national program supported by federal assistance, but states and localities have invested a lot of money in drug court programs and are now branching out into other problem-solving type courts. So I think that's a really good example of how federal assistance allowed a local jurisdiction to experiment with something that became a national model.
I think one of the emerging trends in policing right now is this concept of intelligence-based policing. And probably the people that own the most intelligence or data that local law enforcement need to do their job are the states. So, for example, in Maryland, you know, we have the mug shots of everyone that's gone through prison. We know who are gang members in prisons. We know who's on parole and probation and whether they're in compliance. We know whether they have children that are in the juvenile justice system. And all of this stuff is data that is not generally accessible at the lower level. And using Byrne JAG money, we're able to create ways to knock down silos and information and make sure that we get that information to the local level so they can start targeting offenders who are causing problems in neighborhoods.
And Cabell, the concept of this being part of the stimulus package. Somebody would come along and say, and I've heard this, somebody would come along and say, well, all this is wonderful, you know, have no disagreement with it. Why is it part of a stimulus package? We're trying to revive the economy, not improve criminal justice agencies.
But the response to that is that these programs are people-based. And so if we can expand or create new programs or retain programs, we're retaining people on the payroll.
So what we're saying is that the quality of the criminal justice system has a direct relationship to the economy.
Correct, because the criminal justice system is very people-dependent.
Right. And so safer cities, I mean, it seems very clear to me that as a citizen of the Baltimore metropolitan area and as a person who grew up, was born and raised in Baltimore City, Christian, that the health of Baltimore City, the economic vitality of Baltimore City is tied into citizen perceptions as to how safe the city is and tied into investors' perceptions as to how safe the city is. To me, that's a pretty straightforward analysis, correct?
Correct. I mean, that when Governor O'Malley was mayor of the city, that was how he ran the city. And as the governor of the state of Maryland, he has us committing as many resources as possible to grow the health and safety of the city of Baltimore.
Exactly. It's actually infrastructure capacity building. And when you talk about, you know, whether that is in the form of bridges or roads, Cabell, I agree with you completely. The criminal justice system is very personnel-driven and personnel-based.
Yeah, the police have to be able to be responsive to emerging trends, and sometimes those trends happen in hour 10 or 11 of their shift. And cities have to be able to keep them on the scene at a homicide or on the scene during an event to protect us. And when we're in the middle of a depression or a recession, those overtime funds at the local level are not there. So, you know, that's going to impact, you know, they're going to have to pay the overtime somehow. So where are they going to take that from within the city budget? If we can allocate some of these JAG burn funds to directed overtime violent initiatives, you know, then violent prevention initiatives, then we're going to have to help offset some of the costs within the local government, and we're not going to have to worry about closing recreation centers and offsetting other important city services.
The bottom line, I think, but I'm preaching to the choir here, I'm not quite sure that I'm going to appease the critics, is that unless you have safe cities, unless you have sufficient money to pay overtime, unless you have sufficient numbers of police officers, unless you have money to try new things, to deal with new sets of circumstances, the system is not going to be able to say to anybody in any particular area, come invest with us, come invest your money here. We're looking forward to the jobs. We're looking forward to everything that you can bring to our community or to a company that is in a particular city. Look, please expand. I would imagine once again that person is going to say to himself or herself, you know, this city is just too out of control. I don't want to do this. I'm going to go to Georgia. I'm going to go to the suburbs. I'm going to go overseas because I just don't believe that my employees like working here because they're afraid. To do that, to deal with that, you need sufficient person power. You need sufficient police officers. You need the intelligence. You need the drug courts. You need the parole and probation police cooperative endeavors. You need the reentry programs, which cuts recidivism considerably. I'm preaching to the choir here, correct?
Well, I think, Lynn, also, and Cabell, you can speak to this more than I, there is an accountability piece to this for critics who are looking at, you know, is this a good investment for us and for our tax dollars? And I think we've obviously learned some lessons as a system over the last, the country has over the last 6 months. And we feel and know that the Department of Justice will be making it very clear to us what types of outcome measurement they want and what types of accountability they want for this money that's going to be passed down in the stimulus bill.
Cabell, has there been talk about accountability in terms of, as a follow-up to that, has there been talk about accountability to make sure that people understand that their tax-paid dollars are being spent wisely?
Very definitely. There's provisions in the bill, as Pat said, that the Office of Management and Budget is required to establish some metrics to measure what's happening with this money and how it's contributing to the economic recovery of the country. Now, the government's also setting up a website, www.recovery.gov, that will show how the money is being spent and what the result of that funding is.
And beyond that, I think this morning we heard from a number of states where governors in our state, Maryland, Governor O'Malley has established the Office of Recovery Stat, where we are managing the entire stimulus recovery package, you know, to make sure that everything, that we are being held accountable and that the funds that are coming to Maryland, we're getting as much funding as we can to support the state, and the funds that we're getting are going to justifiable uses that are going to support the initiative of the president.
Kristen, that's great. And, Lynn, we've talked about this before. We don't ever, as public servants, do a good enough job to let the public know the good things.
Mm-hmm.
They only hear about the bad things. And this is going to help. Quite frankly, I think this is a really good part of saying what this money is going to be able to do and how it's going to help the country.
Well, I think that's part of this whole series with the National Criminal Justice Association. They are doing their best to basically say this to the public, that there are successful programs. We have measures in place to check out their success. And there are programs that have been extraordinarily successful. We did a program with NCJA a couple weeks ago dealing with a community in Brooklyn where the courts actually took the lead on the program, and they went from one of the highest crime precincts in New York City to one of the lowest crime precincts. That to me is a statement that we can make to the citizens of this country, in essence saying that, you know, give us the funding, let us try different things, let us take a look at what works throughout the country, and we can do we can provide a certain level of safety. Now, that on my part sounds like boosterism. I guess it's a bit disingenuous because I am part of the criminal justice system, but I personally believe that there are innovative programs out there that need to be brought into Baltimore, need to be brought into Portland, need to be brought into Detroit, and this is the money that possibly can do that.
Yeah, and beyond that, like I've mentioned before, Baltimore's poor, and there's other poor cities out there, and, you know, the cost of a police radio, $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most important piece of equipment a police officer uses every day. And as cities and counties work together to create interoperable systems and build these ginormous 700 megahertz systems where everybody can talk to each other seamlessly, those old 450 megahertz radios and 800 megahertz radios don't work anymore. So you've got this little baby town that suddenly has found itself that it's got to buy 15 new radios. Now, how are you come up with that kind of money,
right?
Well,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, it's just a basic reality of running a police department.
Yep.
$5,000 a radio.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's, again, it's like reentry programs. They cost money. If you're going to treat a person, if you're going to take a person from who's coming out of the prison system, he or she has a mental health problem, and God forbid, a mental health diagnosis for the 16% of offenders throughout the country who are coming back, you know, that needs to be treated, or the odds are that that person's going to go out and harm another person, or certainly create a problem for citizens and for the criminal justice system. We know through research that that you can dramatically reduce recidivism if that individual is treated, but that costs money.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And people, you know, we've got this great technology that can help us figure out stolen cars through license plate recognition. But, you know, do you think that, you know, not to pick on Akron or Toledo or Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, I mean, do you think any of these places have the funds in their budget to do license plate recognition? But, you know, their cars are getting, people are getting their cars stolen there.
And
we have, the technology exists to help find those cars and pay the overtime to use the technology.
Right. And just think about that for a second. We have, as you just mentioned, it's a wonderful example, the technology to just set up in a particular section of the city, run the license plates through a computer, and pull the people over with stolen cars. And we can recover a gazillion stolen cars in a very short amount of time. That's a big bang for technology. But the question is, can the individual jurisdictions and individual states afford it? And everything that I've been reading over the past over the course of the past 5 years is not acquiring that technology, but it's simply holding on to what you have.
Right, installing it and maintaining it. So any kind of technology purchase is going to have an economic impact in a locality, because somebody's got to get up on a light post and hang that camera, and somebody's going to have to maintain it, and those are generally not police officers.
It goes back to your point, Lynn, of it, what it looks like on CSI is not what it's really like.
No, I can't stand CSI.
Right,
I can't stand those shows.
I know,
and it drives me absolutely crazy, because people say, is the real life anything at all like that? And my response is, my heavens, no, not even close. Now, we have wonderful technology in terms of criminalistics. Again, the question becomes, how many people do you have? How well are they trained? How well can you maintain that crime lab? Do you have 24-hour coverage? Do you have the vans? Do you have, you know, it goes on and on and on. These sort of things cost money, ginormous sums of money, as somebody just said. And without the money, you can't do it. It's just as simple as that. So if anybody wants to get a full blow-by-blow description of the entire approximately $4 billion stimulus package, again, our friends at the National Criminal Justice Association, www.ncja.org, has the complete list. And Cabell Cropper, the executive director of the National Criminal Justice System, has been by our microphones today, back at our microphones, and it's really a pleasure to have her back. Pat Dishman, the director of the Tennessee Office of Criminal Justice Programs, and Christian Mahoney, the executive director of the Maryland Governor's Office of Crime Control and Prevention, who helps keep me safe as a citizen of Baltimore County. I thank you all. Any final words that we need to say to finally summarize this whole concept besides sending people to the website at the National Criminal Justice Association?
That's what we're there for, to provide whatever information we can and direct people to where the resources are.
And you guys, quite frankly, have been the leader at the national level in terms of being sure that there is money for the state and local criminal justice systems, Cabell. And so you all can feel very good about quite a victory in terms of convincing the new administration and members of Congress to support this. So congratulations to you guys.
Well, thank you. I'll take some of the credit, but not all of it. Members like Kristen and Pat are really the ones that get the job done with their delegations here in Washington.
And they're the ones...
Yeah, goodness, you're there, Cabell.
Yeah, thank you.
And they're all the ones. They're the ones who also, at the same time, lobby their own members of the Senate and House in terms of what
Correct.
It is they could do if they had money. So we appreciative to all the directors of the criminal justice programs, Office of Crime Controls, throughout the entire country. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Feel free to give us suggestions and input as you're doing on a constant basis. We respond to all of your suggestions, all of your input in terms of how to make the program better. Please have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.